And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we have so much great stuff for you this week. We're going to catch up on news and breaches of the week. And our deep dive is going to be, it's time to put Mark Zuckerberg in jail. Stick around for that. I lay the whole case out from when he was 19 to literally last week. And it is absolutely going to blow your mind. So stick around. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in DNA privacy news, and I actually did a video on this I thought was pretty interesting, because I posit the question, do we actually own our own DNA? And I'm probably going to do a deep dive on this at some point, too, because it's just so fascinating. But here's what's happening. Basically, we are one year out from the Golden State Killer being caught using DNA. And if you're not familiar with that case, the Golden State Killer in California, had been eluding the police for literally decades. And so they took a sample of his DNA from collected evidence and they sent it to a website called GED Match, which basically is where people can submit their DNA publicly for research and all this. And they actually found a family member through DNA, because we're all related. My fifth cousin is related to me, that kind of thing. And so they were able to narrow it down. That set off a complete explosion in basically DNA forensic research. And we have had more than 50 additional cases positively identified through the use of DNA matching through family members. Now, its vast potential to crack tens of thousands of cases has given rise to basically a new forensic science business, the formation of dedicated family tree building police units, and basically the first ever home DNA kit that markets basically to get people to send in their DNA to solve crimes. And so police departments, especially the larger ones, literally are having task forces or departments that are sifting through these cases with DNA, submitting these cases to see if they can find relatives to narrow down who it would be. But this also raises some privacy concerns over genetics. So, for example, a single user can unknowingly cast a web of legal suspicion around hundreds of their family members who not only haven't consented to police search, but haven't even taken a DNA test themselves. And so, perfect example, let's say I take a DNA test. None of my relatives have consented to this. None of my cousins, my mom, my dad, you know, if I had siblings, like all this kind of stuff, nobody has said yes. But now, let's say my third cousin I've never met gets run. Everybody in my DNA pool is going to be linked to me, and now there's suspicion. Now, that person that, you know, the DNA is, they haven't consented to this. They're a suspect. They're not found guilty yet. That's a serious problem. Now, on top of this, we have no laws or policies governing how and when the police and law enforcement can use forensic genetic genealogy. Prosecutors will literally have to defend the constitutionality of this technique when these trials start coming to fruition in summer. Now, in the meantime, law enforcement they're basically exploding this. They're continuing to use this on the assumption that they can legally get this passed. And so the real question is, you know, do we own our DNA? Because we share it. We part own it in one sense with every relative we've ever had, ever, no matter how far our family tree, you know, goes. And where is the protection and privacy for that? And so that is your DNA privacy news of the week, because I think it's an absolutely fascinating situation. I'm probably going to do a deep dive on it, like I said, but in the meantime, you know, your DNA might be out there. And we know, studies have confirmed that if we have the genetic workup of only 2% of the entire global population, we have the genetic workup of every single human on the planet. And so what does that do in terms of privacy, in terms of legal ramifications, in terms of just ownership of over who you are in terms of your genetics? Think about it. And that is your DNA news of the week. And in privacy news, and our deep dive obviously is going to go way into this, but this is actually interesting outside of that. The Federal Trade Commissioner, FTC, has issued an order to several major internet service providers requiring them to share every detail of their data collection practices. We know that, I don't care who it is, it could be Verizon, Sprint, Comcast, Time Warner, like, you know, take your pick. As you're using their service, they are collecting everything. They know where you go. They know what you're doing. They know the telemetry. Let's say if it's a mobile phone, of where you are at any time. My Verizon phone sitting next to me here is telling Verizon where I am, and on and on and on. Now, this information could expose patterns of abuse or otherwise troubling data that basically the FTC or possibly the states, the individual states like my state, Illinois, or California, take your pick, may want to take action against. So we're looking at like Comcast, Google, T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, and the FTC has been asking them for a ton of this data. Now, here are some of the things that the FTC is asking them for, and this is not holistic, but these are some of the most interesting things. The FTC wants to know categories of personal information collected about consumers or devices, including purposes and methods and sources of collection, how the data has been or is being used, third parties that provide or are provided this data, and what limitations are imposed thereupon, internal policies and practices limiting access to this information by employees or service providers, any privacy assessments done to evaluate associated risks and policies, whether consumers are given any choice in collection and retention of data and what the default choices are, total number and percentage of users that have exercised such a choice and what those choices and what choices they made, whether consumers are incentivized to or threatened into opt into data collection and how those programs work, any process for allowing consumers to, quote, access, correct, or delete their personal information, data deletion and retention policies for such information. Now, this, if you're looking at this, this could be basically a prelude to a new regulatory action that turns privacy up to 11. And in April of 2017, President Trump basically said, and I say this because the FTC obviously is under the purview of the Trump administration, President Trump said that he would like to repeal internet privacy rules. He would let the companies sell ad info. He was quoted in April of 2017 saying this. And so everything the FTC is collecting essentially flies in the face of what President Trump had said. And so we're curious to see where this goes. But the one thing that we really want is to turn the privacy up to 11. We are being tracked and data mined to the nth degree. I will be getting into that in the deep dive, as I've said, in terms of Facebook. But that is a huge, huge thing. So hopefully this is good information that the FTC can gather and then execute on to increase our privacy rights as we're using our mobile carriers, our internet service providers, and on and on. And so that is your, I guess, your government regulation news of the day. And in international privacy slash, guess, competing government news, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, has severed ties with Huawei Technologies and ZTE as U.S. authorities investigate the Chinese firms for alleged sanctions violations. Now, this is according to the school 2 weeks ago Wednesday, and I quote, MIT is not accepting new engagements or renewing existing ones with Huawei and ZTE or their respective subsidiaries due to federal investigations regarding violations of sanction restrictions. This is according to Maria Zuber, the vice president for research of MIT. Now, basically, MIT also came out and said that in cases where U.S. and Chinese interests are in direct conflict, MIT would prioritize its home country, the United States, over Chinese's interests. Now, collaborations with China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia would also face additional administrative review process and procedures, according to MIT. Now, basically, Huawei came out and said, "We're disappointed by MIT's decision, but we understand the pressure they're under at the moment. We trust the U.S. judicial system will ultimately reach the right conclusion." And I find this to be interesting because what we've seen is a real push to make sure that Huawei and ZTE are not in the hands of sensitive individuals, that they're not running infrastructure like our new 5G infrastructure, or we're not selling their mobile devices to, let's say, military or intelligence officials or government officials for the possibility that because these corporations have such deep ties to the Beijing government, they might have secret back doors, or they might be collecting data in some way we haven't considered yet, and then getting that back to the Chinese. And so for MIT to come out that does a lot of deep research and a lot of advanced research, not just obviously with the United States, but with other think tanks and governments around the world, for them to come out and say this is a very big thing in terms of data privacy and security and U.S. interests around the globe. So we'll see where this goes, but if we are looking at the competition that we have for intelligence gathering and stealing of data, this is obviously very good news for the United States, not so much for China. So I'll keep you informed of this one as it progresses, but that is your MIT / cyber warfare / China / intelligence news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And in more Huawei news, and it just seems to be getting worse for them, Robert Strayer, the Deputy Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of State, said that Huawei was not a trusted vendor and any use of its technology in 5G networks was a risk. Now, the reason why we're bringing this up, because I just talked about MIT and all that kind of stuff, was basically he said that if they're an untrusted vendor like Huawei, if they're used by another country, the U.S. would have to assess the ability for us to share information and be interconnected. Basically, what they're implying is that if another one of our allies or staunch allies start using Huawei technology, in their 5G infrastructures, that we may not be apt to be sharing data. And the reason why we're doing this is because in the United Kingdom last week, there was a very tense debate in the National Security Council meeting, and they basically approved very narrowly to allow Huawei to be used as a quote-unquote non-core supplier for 5G technology, basically despite objections from five of the cabinet ministers, and obviously the U.S. had been lobbying from them to not do that. And so that opens up the question of, if we are sitting here with Huawei being this potential threat, and now the UK is going to, let's say, spin them up, in the infrastructure in the United Kingdom, we should stop sharing information with that. And so that's a very interesting question. Should we actually stop sharing them? Should the US and the UK be completely aligned in the vendors that they are using because the infrastructure is, so critical? Or should we let the UK do whatever they want to do, and then we find a different way to share with them that would be more secure, let's say bypassing anything that Huawei puts in that country? So we're going to see where that goes. But I thought that was a very interesting news bit for the day. And that has direct ramifications to how we are sharing with literally probably our closest ally that has been an ally since pretty much the founding of the country, since we rebelled against them. So we'll see where that goes. But that is your State Department news, UK, more new UK news of the week. And in online social media safety news, the UK government is actually taking a hard line, and they have appointed what they're claiming to be the world's first independent regulator to keep social media companies in check. Now, here's what's going on. Companies that fail to live up to requirements will face huge fines, with senior directors who are proven to have been negligent of their responsibilities being held personally liable. They may also find access to their websites blocked within the country. Now, some of the things that basically the UK regulators are going to be looking for here is inciting violence and spreading violent content, including terrorist content, encouraging self-harm or suicide, the spread of disinformation and fake news, cyberbullying, children accessing inappropriate material, and child exploitation and abuse content. Now, I find that list to be pretty interesting because some of this could be possibly subjective. The spread of disinformation and fake news, for example, might be one of those things where you could make a legitimate case that, the facts are the same, but the conclusion is different. So it's not fake news, it's commentary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I will not digress into that. Now, as well as applying this to the major social networks such as Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, etc., the requirement will also have to be met by file hosting sites like Dropbox, for example, online forums. So you have that unique, let's say, I have a 1924 car, that kind of thing, and you're talking to people, it applies to them. Messaging services and search engines, so Google, Yahoo, etc. And I quote from Prime Minister Theresa May, For too long, these companies have not done enough to protect users, especially children and young people, from harmful content. We have listened to campaigners and parents and are putting a legal duty of care on internet companies to keep people safe. Now, I find that to be very interesting because basically, if we're looking at something like Facebook, we have a serious problem with this right out of the gate because as I am doing my research for this particular news item, literally, I just read an article that said cyber criminals are using 74 Facebook groups to buy and sell hacking tools, stolen information, and rent out spam services, which literally, I mean, that would put Facebook immediately in jeopardy with UK's new regulations. And it's not a small thing. It's international. They have these cyber criminal groups have 385,000 members that are speaking multitudes of languages, obviously English as well. And if you're thinking, well, okay, Nick, you know, how's Facebook going to police this? They're just simply hiding, hiding these groups with, you know, just random names. Here are some of the group names: Spam Professional, Spammer and Hacker Professional, Facebook Hack Phishing, and on and on and on. And so if we are looking at that as literally the exact same time that the UK is announcing that they're going to do this, Facebook is literally hosting stuff that would enable cyberbullying, would enable inappropriate material, would enable the hacking of other computers, and on and on and on, we have a very serious problem here. And so we'll see what happens with this, but the UK seems to be moving forward, and it's nice to see that groups like Facebook are being held accountable, even if they're not really being held that much accountable in the United States. And again, we're going to be talking about that in the deep dive, so strap yourselves in for that one. But here we are. And so that is your regulation/UK news of the week. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions@securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions@securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's Breaches of the Week has absolutely a ton of different stuff here, and we're going to dive right in. The first thing we're going to be talking about is Docker. Now, I'm not talking about the pants. Docker is actually a product that a lot of infrastructure and technology people use for containers. And basically what a container is, it's obviously a place where you can store data. I'm not going to get technical with this, but Docker Hub is one of the largest cloud-based libraries of Docker container images. And they just suffered a data breach after an unknown attacker gained access to the company's single hub database. The breach reportedly exposed sensitive information on 190,000 hub users, which is roughly 5%, a little less than 5% of their total numbers, including usernames, hash passwords, and basically that's for about 5%. So if you use Docker Hub, heads up. And the reason why this is important to bring up, just to a general audience, because I'm assuming a lot of you are not going to be using Docker or let alone what it is, a lot of services that you may be using online may be using Docker to basically interact with you, to store with you. You just don't know it. You don't see it. And so having the Docker Hub hit is a very serious breach that might have huge ramifications for just a multitude of websites out there. So I'm going to keep involved in that one, but I'll let you guys know. Moving on, we are going to be talking about a company called MCare. They are a physician staffing company, and they just said a data breach exposed personal information of about 31,000 patients and about 60,000 people or so total. The company said it learned February 19th that exposed information included names, dates of birth, and social security numbers, driver's licenses, etc. for some of its patients, employees, and contractors. MCare said it doesn't know if the personal information was taken, but there's no indication that it was used for identity theft or fraud. And that is actually a very hard thing, to look at when we are talking about stuff like this, because quite frankly, there is a lot of There's a lot of room here when we are stealing stuff. In other words, if I'm stealing the information from MCARE and I am putting it onto the dark web, that information might have already been stolen. And so it's very hard for them to say, oh, well, we know that no data has been used from this breach yet, because it's really hard to prove. And so that's where we go for there. But moving on, we're going to talk about how we can tick off Arnold Schwarzenegger. We are talking about bodybuilding.com. Now, this is a popular website for fitness and bodybuilding enthusiasts, obviously. And they announced last week that hackers were able to gain access into their systems. And I quote, "We became aware of a data security incident involving unauthorized access to our systems in February 2019. We engaged one of the leading data security firms to conduct a thorough investigation, which traced the unauthorized activity to a phishing email received in July 2018. Now, that is basically it. And if you are using bodybuilding.com, heads up to you, you might have been exposed in this. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the University of Alaska. They are notifying potentially affected students and individuals after an investigation into a data privacy incident involving potential unauthorized access to certain UA email accounts happened. Now, in February of 2018, so over a year ago, a third party accessed email accounts of students and changed passwords and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Now, the school is saying individuals' names, government issued identification numbers, dates of birth, digital signatures, driver's license numbers, usernames, passwords, financial account numbers, health and or health insurance information, passport numbers, and UA student identification numbers may have been hit. And for certain members, social security numbers may have also been a factor as well. Basically, what they're saying is, well, if you've used, if you've emailed any one of these things out in your email, it's possible that they were exposed. And so, I'm sure they can search the email on the administrative side of this and are seeing all of these things. So, if you are with the University of Alaska, heads up to you. And moving on, we're going to be talking about the Arlington Public School District. This is in Arlington, Virginia. A quote-unquote error in the data inputted into the college readiness system has accounted for a data exposure. This may have exposed the name, address, grade point average, and Collins entrance exam scores of nearly two dozen students to an unrelated parent. So basically, they had something misconfigured, and what ended up happening is this parent gained access to about 24 students or so. It's a very small breach, but I'm actually very happy to see the Arlington Public School District disclose this kind of thing, because I think it's important to be transparent with this. We all make mistakes. So kudos to you, Arlington Public Schools, and hopefully you have closed that issue. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the United Way of the Big Bend. Now, they are alerting residents to a possible data breach involving a tax assistance program. Their CEO, Katrina Rolle, said, and I quote, "We recently became aware of a possible data security breach that occurred when taxpayer information inside a secure lockbox was stolen from the vehicle of a VITA site coordinator in late March." I don't know what a VITA is, or I know what a site coordinator is, but I don't know what that is. Now, she also went on to say that working with the IRS and Tallahassee Police Department, we have taken positive, proactive steps to cooperate and collaborate, including reaching out directly to potentially affected taxpayers to help protect them by providing the facts and important information. And so if you are a member or you are in some way affiliated with the United Way of the Big Bend, heads up to you. If you got notified, please take action immediately. From that, we're going to talk about the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. They just had a data breach, and this breach appears to concern a mass inadvertent disclosure of non-public manufacturer and product-specific information. It appears the information could have been released months ago, but the Consumer Product Safety Commission only recently discovered this issue. Now, based on the type of information typically retained by the CPSC, the disclosed information likely involves safety incidents specific to manufacturers and private labelers of consumer products. And so if you are a manufacturer or a private labeler of consumer products and you've had some run-ins due to safety issues, that could be out there for the world to see right now, thanks to a breach of the Consumer Product Safety Commission in the U.S. Moving on, let's head on over to India. Now, India, their third largest IT outsourcing firm, Wipro or Wipro, got hit last month, and new evidence shows, this is what has just come to light, that criminals also went after competing firms such as Infosys and Cognizant, and this was achieved via phishing campaigns. And so if you are using Wipro or Wipro, Pro as an IT provider in some way, shape, or form, you might want to check to them to see if you were affected. We're actually going to stick in India because we've got another one here. Now, there's a local search service in India called Just Dial. They faced a data breach about a month ago or so. It was about 2 weeks ago or so, because I do this every 2 weeks. They had basically data of more than 100 million users was exposed, including names, email IDs, phone numbers, gender, date of birth, addresses. This was all made publicly available. Now, they basically had four application program interfaces, or APIs. This is a technical term for something that is, let's say, out there in the public that you might be able to access. They were basically had these things running, and they were unprotected for years. And so people were able to publicly expose all of the user information from Just Dial. Coming back here into the United States, we're going to be talking about Navicent Health. They're part of the Central Georgia Health System, and they just disclosed that they suffered a data breach. Now, they learned of a digital attack involving some of their employees' corporate email accounts in July of 2018. The health organization responded by notifying law enforcement about this event and retaining a digital forensics firm to help determine what happened. This investigation revealed that on January 24th, 2019, that the security incident had affected some email accounts containing patients' personal information, including their names, dates of birth, addresses, medical information, billing data, social security numbers, etc. So, if you are part of Navicent Health, heads up there. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Chipotle. Now, Chipotle, basically, here's what's happening. A whole bunch of their customers have said that their accounts have been hacked, and they are reporting fraudulent orders charged to their credit cards, sometimes totaling hundreds of dollars. Why a hacker would buy hundreds of dollars of Chipotle boggles my mind, but here we are. Now, Chipotle came out and said that they told this to TechCrunch, that they're basically, the problem that we have here is not that Chipotle has been hacked, but it's a credential surfing attack. Now, basically what this means is that if you are using, let's say, an email address and a password to log in Chipotle, and you are using that email address and password, the exact same email address and password somewhere else, and that website got hit, then Chipotle was just hit as well, and only in that the hacker is using your credentials in multiple places. So if I steal your username and password, I'm going to try it in banks, restaurants, social media. I'm going to try it everywhere to try to get in to see what I can steal, what I can use, what I can do, whatever with. And that's what happened. So Chipotle wasn't hit. Their customers were.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.